those who are giving, and those who are equal, there is embracing, and those who are senior, there is offering respects, like that, from Balaram and from Krishna. It's explained in one verse from the first canto in Srimad Bhagavatam, and that when Krishna went to Dwarka, he greeted seven types of people in seven different ways. Some he shook their hands, some he smiled at them, some he embraced, some he offered obeisances, some offered obeisances to him. So this is very important. In Western civilization, people have, they just have a very loose type of interaction with each other. Really, they don't respect each other at all. There's no respect. And so the only type of respect is there is that maybe there's some consideration of a little bit of sensitivity to the other person's feelings, but there's no real respect and honor for anyone. And therefore people, parents don't respect, children don't respect parents, and parents don't really give care to their children as they should give, and the bosses don't really care about their employees, employees don't care about their bosses, husbands and wives really don't care about each other, they're just trying to exploit each other for sense gratification. This is material life, and this is due to a lack of training. Vedic culture, which is a spiritual culture, gives some understanding that there must be an etiquette which is conducive to bringing out a loving relationship between people on different levels. An etiquette is the foundation of one's character, really. Without etiquette, there is no real reciprocation with other living individuals. It becomes mundane. It becomes very impersonal. So here, Balaram is just showing that. So I wanted to bring out that point. The cowherd said, "O Rama, are all our relatives doing well? And Rama, do all of you, with your wives and children, still remember us? It is our great fortune that sinful Kamsa has been killed and our dear relatives freed. It is also our good fortune that our relatives have killed and defeated their enemies and found complete security in great fortress." Sukadeva Goswami said, "Honored to have personal audience of Lord Balaram, the young gopi smiled and asked him, 'Is Krishna, the darling of the city woman, living happily? Does he remember his family members, especially his father and mother? Do you think he will ever come back even once to see his mother? And does mighty arm Krishna remember the service we always did for him? For Krishna's sake, O descendant of Dasarha, we abandon our fathers, mothers, brothers, husbands, children and sisters, even though these family relationships are difficult to give up. But now, O Lord, that same Krishna has suddenly abandoned us and gone away, breaking off all affectionate ties with us. Yet how could any woman fail to trust his promises?" So at the same time, they're feeling separation, but they're kind of like chastising Krishna. They would become angry in love. "How can intelligent city women possibly trust the words of one whose heart is so unsteady and who is so ungrateful? They must believe him because he speaks so wonderful, and also because his beautiful smiling glances arouse their lust." So the gopis are saying, the city women are being fooled by Krishna's smiling and tricky words. "Why bother talking about him, dear gopis? Please talk of something else. If he passes his time without us, then we shall simply pass our time without him." So now love becomes frustrated, so they say, okay, we don't need him. While speaking these words, the cowherd woman remembered Lord Sari's young laughter, his pleasing conversations with them, his attractive glances, his style of walking, and his loving embraces. Thus they began to cry. The Supreme Lord Balaram, the attractive of all, being expert in all kinds of various conciliations, consoled the gopis by relaying to them the confidential messages Lord Krishna has sent with him. These messages deeply touched the gopis' heart. So now Balaram is giving Krishna's message. Lord Balaram, the personality of Godhead, resided there for 2 months of Madhu and Madhava, and during the nights he gave his cowherd girlfriends conjugal pleasure. In the company of numerous women, Lord Balaram enjoyed a garden of the Jamuna River. This garden was bathed in the rays of the full moon and caressed by breezes bearing the fragrance of night blooming lotuses. Sent by the demigod Varuna, the divine Varuni liquor flowed from a tree hollow and made the entire forest even more fragrant with its sweet aroma. So Varuna sent his daughter, Varuni, in the form of honey. The wind carried, just like on Balaram's appearance day, what do we offer Balaram as part of this? Honey, or Varuni beverage. Well, what is Varuni anyway? There's some controversy, not controversy, but there's some discussion of what actually is Varuni. Does anyone have anyone to... Shankar? Sometimes they say it's some kind of liquor made from honey. A kind of an intoxicant that is, the essence of it is honey. And others just say it's honey. It's mentioned in two different ways. Madhu, what is it called? Madhu? Madhuparka? It says that the demigods drink Madhuparka and also become intoxicated on this honey beverage. It's a honey beverage. It's called Varuni. We're not advocating any of you to try it, because it's against the four principles. But for God, He can do it. No problem with God. The wind carried to Lord Balaram the fragrances that flooded that sweet liquor. And when he smelled it, he went to the tree. There he and his female companions drank. As the Gandharvan sang his glory, Lord Balaram joyed with the brilliant circle of young women. He appeared just like the Indra's elephant, the lordly Airavata, enjoying the company of she elephants. So it goes on and on. So Balaram performed his pastimes. Thus for Balaram, all the nights passed like a single night as he enjoyed in Vraj, his mind enchanted by the exquisite charm and beauty of the Vraj's young lady. So Balaram went and stayed there for 2 months, pacifying the residents of Vrindavan, especially giving pleasure to the gopis of Vrindavan. But again, when he left, everything returned again to sadness. Any questions? So today we're celebrating the actual return of Balaram to Vrindavan. Comments? Discussions? Or anything? Yes? Vamsi Vadan. Yeah, that today is his appearance day. He has different kinds of flutes. He has 3 kinds of flutes. One is 6 inches long, one is 12 inches long, and I think one is 18 inches or a little longer. One is called Murali, one is called Venu, and one is called Vamsi. He's got 3 flutes, 3 different sizes. Huh? Different purposes? Well, God is not boring. You know, he likes a little variety. How many pairs of clothes do you have? Right? You might have different kinds of, you know, you might have, what do we have different kinds of? And they have different kinds of hats, right? This color, that color, right? Even an ordinary person has so many varieties of different things, right? As they say, variety is the spice of life. Spiritual world, Krishna has variety. But he uses his flutes in different ways for different purposes. Like that. I don't exactly know which flute applies to which purpose, but they're also interchangeable. Oh, sometimes when we dress the devis, we give them, like the Gujaris, you know. We have different types of sizes flutes for Krishna. Yeah. How many sizes do we have? 2?
Yeah.
2? How many? So many. 6?
More.
So, yeah, I was just mentioning 3. We have at least 6 sizes. Different colors. Some are silver, some are gold.
Wood.
Wood. He has a bamboo flute also. Yes, mother.
So as the Balaram pastime, I've heard that now he didn't have the same, he was married in the same
He had his own set of gopis. He had his own set of gopis, yes. No, he had his pastime with Kalindi when he dissected the Jamuna River. He called Jamuna over to him and she didn't come. And then he took his plowshare and he started to cut her into different streams, and then she realized that this was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So she appeared in her transcendental form as Kalindi. So Balaram's consort is also he has two consorts. One is Revati and one is it Kalindi? Or
huh?
Yeah. Ruri, yes. She has another name. He has two, right? Do you know Shankar? Revati and the Kalindi? Well, that was Krishna's wife, Kalindi. Kalindi Jamuna Jaya. Kalindi, I think she was also. Yeah, the Jamuna River also became the consort of Balaram. Yeah, Jamuna personified. Yes. Everyone is attracted to Krishna. And also they're all attracted to Balaram. Balaram and Krishna are non-different. In the sense that Balaram, the only difference between Balaram and Krishna is Balaram is whitish, Krishna is blackish. But when we speak about Vrindavan, we speak about Krishna. And Balaram is there also. Krishna, Balaram is his older brother. This is the spiritual world. Now in the spiritual world there's varieties. And there's different moods. And there's different... So everyone's attracted to Krishna. But when Balaram, sometimes he dances a rasa dance, he has his own set of gopis for dancing a rasa dance. But that doesn't mean they're not attracted to Krishna. Everyone's attracted to Krishna. The land, the cows, the trees, the flute, the birds, the clouds, the rivers, they're all personifications. They're personalities. They're not static. They're all got their loving relationship with Krishna. They all work to enhance Krishna's pastimes. Everyone is serving Krishna in Vrindavan. The grass, the trees, the birds, the cows, everyone. They're all sentient. Krishna remains the He remains the focus for everyone. And Balaram is there also. It means that, yes, when he dances the rasa dance, there are those gopis that dance the rasa dance with Balaram. I believe it's that they didn't dance the rasa dance with Krishna. Huh? Yeah. Ah, okay. Okay, there's the answer. They were too young at the time when they. So when Balaram came back, and there was another set of gopis. Okay, because it's mentioned in the Krishna book. Thank you. They were too young at the time. You should read these pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan, and it's so full of wonderful, wonderful. Nasnu Bhav Venu Gita. Venu Gita is just so wonderful. More pastimes of Krishna Vrindavan. But we must also, in order to understand these things, what is the benefit of reading these if we don't understand them? Well, the benefit of reading them, even though we don't understand them, is we divert our mind away from the things of this world. The reason we get absorbed in Krishna's pastimes is because we're trying to lose our attraction for the same things in this world. Mundane, love, friendship, society. All these are attractive to the conditioned souls in this world. We can't just give it up. We enter into Krishna's family. We enter into Krishna's activities. We enter into Krishna's personnel. We take on a whole family of spiritual people. And we enter into that, and in that way we become completely satisfied in that new family, which is really our eternal family. And in this family that we've been associating with life after life in forms of relatives, friends, societies, and different relationships, which ultimately just bring us to suffering and misery and illusion and bondage and rebirth, and we can easily give that up. We can just naturally become natural. But you can't give it up unless you replace it, unless you move into the spiritual world. So we enter into the spiritual world by going into these pastimes and reading and discussing them and absorbing our mind and learning about the different personalities in there and their different characteristics. So this, all this information is very detailedly explained in so many wonderful books. The Goswamis just spent their whole life writing books about, you know, the spiritual world and the activities. So this is a very important, even though we don't understand or remain somewhat theoretical, by gradually, through chanting of the holy names of the Lord, and through gradually entering into these pastimes by constantly hearing and reading and chanting about them, we actually become attracted to them. We develop a genuine attraction. And when that genuine attraction comes, then gradually we lose our attraction for the things of this world. So that's why Krishna comes, to attract our minds. He brings the spiritual world down to the material world just for us. Okay. Wilson, you had a question before? Okay. Thank you. All right, so any more questions or points on? Yes?
The extension of the Lord is not different than this, and that includes all five in Tantra Tattva, or this Lord?
There's three that are Vishnu Tattva, and there's one that is Shakti Tattva, and one that is Jiva Tattva. Vishnu Tattva is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Balaram, which is Nityananda, and Advaita Acharya. Shakti Tattva is Gadadhar and Jiva Tattva is Srivas. So different tattvas like that. Different truths. Tattva means truth. So the first three are considered to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The fourth one is considered to be the energy of the Lord. Shakti Tattva, Gadadhar is the energy. And Srivas is Narada Muni, he's Jiva Tattva. Like us. But they're all transcendental. Okay? Yes, Mother. I'm sorry, you have to speak a little louder. Yeah. In the nectar devotion, Krishna's flute is mentioned, the different functions, it's all there. Nectar devotion is a must study for anyone in Krishna consciousness. You must read and study that book, especially the first 19 chapters. That is essential for understanding Krishna consciousness. That has all the principles of how to execute devotional service, what to avoid in devotional service, and the different relationships. It goes into so many things. It's called the handbook of Krishna consciousness. It's like if you get You want to learn about a machine, you get a handbook and it tells you everything, how to operate the machine. The handbook for Krishna consciousness is Nectar of Devotion. Everyone must read that book, study it, discuss it, understand it. That's the key, really breaking into the Krishna consciousness is Nectar of Devotion. It was written by Rupa Goswami and translated by Srila Prabhupada. He expanded on Rupa Goswami's work. But even if it's too deep for you, the first 19 chapters are that. If you just do the first 19 chapters, that's sufficient. The rest of the book really goes into very deep, deep, deep philosophical points. But it's all interesting. It's all interesting. And we should, that book is a must, a study, is an Nectar of Devotion. It's part of the initial training for new devotees. We train new devotees in four books, Bhagavad Gita, Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction, and Sri Upanishads are the basis of all education in Krishna consciousness. But Nectar of Devotion has been explained as being the handbook for devotees, and it personifies Radharani. Krishna is personified as Srimad Bhagavatam. This is none different than Krishna. Chaitanya Charitamrita is none different than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And our Nectar Devotion is none different than Radharani. Radharani being the personification of bhakti. She represents bhakti. She gives bhakti and she is bhakti. And Nectar Devotion is more or less the handbook for understanding bhakti. That is the position of Nectar Devotion. So that's a very, very essential book. Maybe we should have some classes on Nectar Devotion gradually. That would be wonderful. We did that a couple years ago. We had systematic classes and we had tests. And there are courses that are devised for studying the Nectar Devotion, very systematic. But that is important. Okay. So today is also, it's a whole list of things. It's Vamsi Vadan's appearance day, and it's Shyamananda Prabhu's appearance day. I don't know how much time we have. We also have tonight. So what I'm going to do is read a little bit about Vamsi Vadan Thakur, and then we can end the class, and I'll speak a little bit about Shyamananda too. And then tonight we'll continue with the discussion. This is Vamsi Vadana Thakur. On the Chaitra Purnima, which is today, the full moon day of the month of Chaitra, Sri Vamsi Vadana Thakur took birth in this world. It was a sweet moon in 1466, and everybody sang in great joy at the appearance of such a great soul. Vamsi Vadanada. Thakur is also known as Vamsi Vadan, Vamsi Das, Vamsi. Within Kuliya are the villages known as Tegari, Venchadya, Vedadapada, Chinadanga, Gram, Srikara Chatyopadaya's sons moved to Bilvagram, Padulihatta, and Venchiada in Kuliya. His eldest son was Sri Yudhisthira Chatyopadhyaya. His three sons were Madhavadas, Haridas, and Krishnadas. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left Jagannath Puri and came to Bengal to visit the Ganges and his mother after 5 years of his sannyas, he stayed for 7 days at the house of Madhava. It was there that the Lord instructed and delivered Devananda Pandit as well as many others. When he granted general amnesty to all those who had committed offenses during the Lord's early life in Navadvip Dham. It was in the house of Sri Madhavadas that Vamsi Vadana took his birth. His mother's name was Srimati Chandrakalavadi, Kaladevi. Vamsi Vadana Thakur is the avatar of Krishna's flute. So here we go. He is the incarnation of Krishna's flute. That day, the day that he took his birth, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was staying in the house of Sri Madhava. Advaita Acharya Prabhu was also present. Madhava Das was a greatly devoted soul and was very attached to Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Lord was very affectionate toward his son Vamsi. The Chaitanya Charitamrita makes no mention of Vamsi Vedanta Thakur. However, in Chaitanya Chandodaya of Kavi Kanapur, it is written, quote, "When the Lord went to Navadvip Dam after crossing the Ganges, he stayed for 7 days in Kuliagram at the house of Madhava Das. Mahaprabhu had been in Shantipur at the house of Advaita Acharya. He crossed the Ganga and came to Kuliagram, where he stayed for 7 days in order to give mercy to the people of Navadvip. Sri Narahari Chakravarti Thakur writes in his Bhakti Ratnakar that when Sri Vasacharya went to visit the birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Mayapur, during his pilgrimage to Navadvip, he met Vamsi Vedanta Thakur. At that time, Vamsi Vedanta Thakur bestowed his blessings upon young Sri Vasacharya, who also managed to take darshan of the holy feet of Sri Vishnupriya Devi. Narahari writes, quote, "Vamsi Vedanta Thakur sat at the young Sri Vasacharya's lap and wet his head with tears of ecstasy and love of God." After the disappearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Vamsi Vedanta Thakur was engaged as a servant of Vishnupriya. It is said that he became the foremost recipient of her mercy. After the disappearance of Vishnupriya Devi, he took the Mahaprabhu Deity established by her to Koladweep, which is presently the town known as Navadweep Dam. There he established the worship of the Mahaprabhu Deity. There he also established the deity of Krishna known as Pranavallabha. In the summer, he used to stay in Bilvagram. There in Bilvagram, he was famous among learned scholars, Bhattacharyas, and pious gentlemen. He had two sons named Chaitanya Das and Nittai Das. Chaitanya Das also had two sons, Sri Ramachandra and Sri Sachinandana. In the Gaudiya published by the Gaudiya Math, it is written, quote, "Sri Janavamata accepted alms from this Ramachandra and initiated him in the place called Kadadaha after instructing him in the science of Vaishnavism." So that must be Ramachandra Kaviraj. Sounds like it's during the time of Janava. Do you know? No. Doesn't say. Sri Ramachandra Goswami was the Brahmachari. Okay. He engaged his younger brother Sri Sachinanda in the service of Raman Krishna in the place of Bhagana Pada. Sri Sachinanda Goswami's sons and descendants are at the present day Goswami caste in Bhagavad Pada. Vamsi Vedanta Thakur was a lyrical poet and a composer of songs. All his songs are especially sweet and mellow and express deep moods of devotion. In one famous song, he has expressed the separation felt by Mother Sachi upon the sannyas of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Vamsi Vedanta Thakur has also composed songs about Krishna's Dana Lila, Nakavilas, and Vana Vihara Lila. So who knows what are those three Leelas? Dana Lila. Which Leela is that? What does Dana mean? Right. You're collecting taxes.
And the gopis are trying to enter one area from Lava to another. Krishna would block the road.
Mathura. So that's Dandila. Then there's N-A-U-K-A, Vilas. Boat. Krishna the boatman. That's a very good story. Who knows that story? Does anyone want to tell the story of the bone man? Me? I'll mess it up. The story is that the gopis were bringing their, every day they would bring their milk and yogurt and all the different milk products and sweets across the Jamuna. So one day Krishna disguised himself as a boatman. So he got in the boat and the gopis he came across. So he was rowing and he got halfway across and he said, "I'm getting very tired." And the gopis didn't know who it was. Run around with there. So in order for me to keep going, I have to have some of your milk sweets, some of that sandesh, and some of that barfina yogurt. So they fed Krishna everything, thinking they were feeding the boatman. So Krishna, he relished everything. And then he just laid down in the boat. He was intoxicated. So he said, "What is this useless boatman?" And now he doesn't want to do anything. So Krishna was there. And then they said, "Come on, we have to go." So Krishna got up and he started rowing. And then all of a sudden the boat started to rock. And Krishna was shaking the boat. So it looked like it was going to overflow. So Krishna said, "The boat's going to overturn. The only way we can stop it is all you gopis, you have to take off your jewelry and throw it into the Jamuna." So they took off all their jewelry and threw it in the Jamuna. So after one little while later, it started to rock again, and Krishna said, "Well, I think we have another problem here." He was the boatman, of course. They didn't know who he was. They said, "Now, the gopis, the only way we can go is you have to take off your clothes and throw it in the Jamuna." So they said, "We'll throw you in the Jamuna." That's what they said to the boatman. So, Krishna, he started to row. And then he got tired and he laid down. And then he couldn't go any farther. And then he was asking for more milk sweets, I think. And so they gave him something. And then Radharani came up to him and to give him something. And then somehow she reached under his disguise and she pulled out a flute. She said, "This boatman is not a boatman. It's Krishna." So Krishna got caught. It's a wonderful pastime. If you see that, you'll see that sometimes there's a nice picture of that. It's a wonderful story. Anyway, that's the Nakalila. And then the Vana Vihara Lila. Vana means forest. Vihara means what? Is that when Krishna stole the clothes of the gopis, right? Vana Vihara.
It's one Lila here.
So Vihara means many pastimes, right? Mm-hmm. Forest pastimes of Krishna. Okay, so that was the end of the description of Vamsidas. Vamsidas, Vamsi Vadana, or Vamsi Vadananda Thakur. He has different ways of being called. Any questions on that? Yes?
I was just really explain how a flute can
take incarnation.
You
want to meet another flute that just took it to incarnate? There's a flute right here that's incarnated. The flute incarnates many ways. I can tell you another way. It's right in this room. It's not a flute anymore. It's the incarnation. It's sitting right in the middle of the devotees right now. The Mridanga. Mridanga is the incarnation of Krishna's flute. It's described that when Krishna was coming to the material world as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had to leave his flute behind. And I can't take you. I have no purpose for you in this particular lila. So you have to stay in Vrindavan. The flute said, "I don't want to stay here without you. What's Vrindavan without you? It's just another forest." So the Lord thought, okay. Well, I can. He thought, and he decided, "I will be performing Sankirtan, so I'll need some instruments." So the flute incarnated as Mridanga. So So it's considered that the mridanga is not different than Krishna's flute.
How did that happen?
How's it done? When you get to that level, you'll understand. You can understand how transcendental personality can incarnate in different objects. But these are manifestations of their activities in this material world. That's why it's explained that those who don't know how to play mridanga shouldn't play mridanga, considered to be offensive. You know, unless you know how to play, you can practice outside, but in the temple, mridanga should only be played by those who know how to play. The mridanga should never be placed on the ground, just like you have it here, sitting on the carpet. It never should be placed directly on the ground. It's considered improper also. And it shouldn't be thrown around, mishandled. It's not just an instrument. It's actually Krishna's paraphernalia. It's also considered non-different than Balaram. Balaram incarnates as Krishna's paraphernalia to assist Krishna in his pastimes. So it's not only an incarnation of the flute, it's also a manifestation of the energy of Balaram too. We never put cartels on the floor. We never put anything that is used for worship on the floor. Books, cartels, prasadam. Never good. None of these things are meant to touch the floor. And they should be handled like they are, you know, non-different than Krishna. Krishna is paraphernalia, non-different, really. Yes, Shankar. Yeah, that's the answer. Everything is sentient. Spiritual world doesn't mean that, I mean, like in things in this material world, they're just what they are. They're dead matter. But in the spiritual world, there's no matter. Everything is spirit. Spirit means consciousness. So the trees have consciousness, the plants have consciousness, the rocks are conscious, the air is conscious, the clouds are conscious, and the rain is conscious. Everything's conscious. There's not anything that's not conscious. It all is consciousness. It's pure spiritual consciousness. And not only is it pure spiritual consciousness, it can change its form. If a tree wants to become a cow, it can become a cow. If a rock wants to become a bird, it can become a bird. It can change its form anyway. But it's done only for Krishna's pleasure, in order to serve Krishna in different ways. So nothing deteriorates, and everything is there. When the devotees eat prasadam in the spiritual world, they eat it, but the prasadam is still there after they eat it. Can you understand that? No, you can't, because our brains don't function on that level. It's just that we function on the material. I'm seeing things on a certain level. And when somebody says eternal, what does eternal mean? Can you explain eternality? No, you can't. Eternal means there's no beginning and there's no end. And so our thought process works in terms of beginning and end. We see things in terms of time. We function in terms of time. We reason in terms of time. But all these reasonings are all relative to the material world. On the transcendental plane, none of these laws apply. Everything is. It's perfect. It exists and it's perfect. So how can you understand that? You can't. You have to be there to understand it. But in the process of getting there, we have to understand it at least theoretically.
Would we recognize each other or call these pastimes? Would we recognize each other?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you get to the spiritual world, you know everything. You'll remember in one of your lives you were Murari. Yeah, you remember everybody. If I'm not there, you might not remember me. But if I'm there, you'll remember me for all the problems I gave you. But yeah, consciousness means perfection. Perfection means there's no forgetfulness. There's no inebrieties. There's no defects. Not only will you remember this life, you remember all your lives. And you'll also remember why you fell down, too. And then you won't do it again either. Krishna says that in Gita, once returning to my spiritual world, one that never comes back again to this miserable material world. Once you get there, you don't want to come back. It's like one sticking one's hand in the fire means, okay, I've been burnt. And now I know I shouldn't put my hand back in the fire again. You can still put your hand in the fire because you always remain in the consciousness of having choice. Choice always remains within your ability. You're never locked into a type of restriction. Spirit means ultimate freedom, but you won't use that choice again. That's pretty much guaranteed, unless... And the Acharyas explained it that way. So the idea is now we have to get there. That's why we have to keep hearing about the spiritual world, hearing about Krishna's pastimes, absorbing our minds in these things, chanting the holy names and chanting. Gradually we actually develop a real attraction. And for one who's a pure devotee, he's no more resident of this material world. Pure devotee means that he's a resident of the spiritual world in consciousness, but he still may be in the material world. So we have to try to become purified. Yes, Mother. It is and it isn't, in the sense that Krishna has three energies, main energies, the spiritual, the material, and the marginal. This is called Bahiranga Shakti, which means Krishna's material energy, which is made up, as he explains in Bhagavad Gita, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Because they're these separated energies, but because they come from Krishna, ultimately they're spiritual. So the material world has two purposes. One, to fulfill the desires of the living entity to enjoy, and two, to help the living entities come back to their spiritual consciousness by using everything in this material world for Krishna's service. So this material world has two functions. When we function according to our material consciousness, this material world is material. When we function towards our spiritual consciousness, gradually we spiritualize matter. And although it still appears to be matter, ultimately it's spirit. But still, within the spiritual categories and definitions, this is a particular definition of spiritual energy, which is distinct from Krishna's internal energy. Spiritual master has a spiritual body, so you might think it's matter, it might look like matter, but it's not. Spiritual master, a pure devotee's body is not material, that's why they don't burn a pure devotee's body. They bury it, because it's not material. But that, you know, that's a matter of realization. Yes, Wilson.
I was reading that Paramatma and the spirit soul are actually of the spiritual world within the material world.
Yes.
As part of us is actually still in the spiritual world.
Yes.
And I guess a certain aspect of the spirit soul is so connected with the Paramatma that it actually when it spiritualizes the body of the spiritual master, it becomes a spiritual body.
Yeah, in that sense that when one is absorbed in Krishna, he's no longer, you know. His Prabhupada used the example. There's a big, big discussion between Dr. Patel and Srila Prabhupada. Dr. Patel, if many of you have any familiar with Prabhupada's tape lectures, there was one Indian man whose name was Dr. Patel who would accompany Prabhupada on walks in Bombay regularly, mostly from the years 1973, 1974. And he was practically, he liked Prabhupada a lot. Prabhupada liked him. But their relationship was like, kind of like friendly very friendly, but they were always arguing. Because Dr. Patel, he would always argue with Prabhupada. And devotees would get so upset. But Prabhupada accepted him because he liked Dr. Patel. And even though he didn't have a mood of awe and reverence, which all the devotees were hoping he would, he was quite knowledgeable. And Prabhupada liked him. So they used to get into some discussion. So one time there was a big discussion where he was saying that Prabhupada was saying the spiritual master's body is spiritual. He said it's not like Krishna's body though. And Prabhupada said, yes, it's not like Krishna's body, but it's still spiritual. He said, I think there's some difference. Prabhupada said, there's no difference. Spirit is spirit. Just like if you use the example, if you put an iron rod in the fire and you keep it in the fire long enough, ultimately the iron becomes like fire. It loses its metallic qualities and it takes on the quality of fire. So Prabhupada used that example to explain the spiritual master is so spiritualized by his absorption in devotional service, and he's purified, that his body is no longer considered to be matter. If you see his body as material, then that means that's your defect. Lord Nityananda came to the material world. He got hit in the head with a pot by Jagai and Madai. What happened? His head was oozing blood. So does that mean that he was bleeding, his body was material? No. It's still 100% spiritual. But people who have material vision can't understand that. Therefore, you have to have spiritual vision to really understand spiritual philosophy and spiritual nomenclature. But we accept it because that is the scriptures coming from the acharyas like that.
The description of Shalamita Prabhu?
Huh. It's about... Shalamita is probably one of the most important Vaishnavas in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lila. Yeah, I think it's 9 o'clock now. We should end class because...
Well, that's going to take a couple of minutes just to give a
brief...
Something about
that. Okay, I can do that. I don't mind. It's just the devotees... Okay. I was also just told by Sunil Madhava's good wife that today is also Hanuman Jayanti. Hanuman Jayanti. Hanuman Dhirasev Madhava. Shyamananda Prabhu. Simply by accepting the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are perfect, one may attain the service of Krishna in Vrindavan. That's a quote by Narottam Das Thakur. Simply by accepting that the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are eternally perfect, one may attain the service of Krishna in Vrindavan. Quote, Narottam Das Thakur. Sri Shyamananda, Srinivas, and Sri Narottam Das Thakur are all eternal associates of Sri Gaurasundara. For the purpose of preaching the holy message of Sri Chaitanya all over the earth, they appeared within this world. Sri Shyamananda Prabhu was born in Utkala, in a place called Darenda Bhadurapura. His father's name was Sri Krishna Mandal. His mother's name was Sri Durika. Sri Krishna Mandal, who was in the dynasty of the six Gopas, had sired many sons and daughters who had passed away before this son took his birth. Because of the great misfortune which had befallen his family, Sri Krishna Mandal named the boy Duki. So what does Duki mean? Sadness or unhappiness. So he met all his children before them died. So this one he named Duki. Everyone said that the boy would become a great person, a Mahapurush. On an auspicious moment, on the full day moon of the month of Chaitra, he appeared within the world by the mercy of Lord Jagannath. Because he had come to preach the glories of Jagannath, the Lord himself protected him as he grew up. The boy was so beautiful, he was like Cupid himself. All eyes were fixed upon him. Gradually, it was for the time for the child's grain eating ceremony, which is at the time, which is the child's first time for being offered food. And soon after that, he began going to school. Seeing the amazing brain this child had, the scholars were astonished. In a short time, the boy learned Sanskrit grammar, poetry, and rhetoric. And soon after this, he became seriously studying the scriptures. Upon hearing the glories of Sri Chaitanya and Nityananda from the mouths of the local devotees, the boy developed a powerful desire to take shelter at their lotus feet. His father, Sri Krishna Mandala, was a great devotee of Krishna. Seeing his son always engrossed in thoughts of Gaura Nithai, he took him to take mantra initiation. The boy said, "The Hridaya Chaitanya Prabhu is my guru. He lives in Ambika Kalna. His guru is Gurudas Pandit. Those two great brothers, Sri Gaura and Nityananda, always reside in his home. If you give the order, I will go to him and become his disciple." Sri Krishna Mandal said, "My boy, that is a long way away. How will you get there?" Dukhi said, "Father, many people from here will soon go to Gauradesh to bathe in the Ganga. When they go, I will go with them." For a long time, his father thought this over and finally gave his permission. After receiving the blessings of his father and mother, he began his journey to Gauradesh. Gradually, he came to Navadvip and Shantipur and finally arrived at Ambika Kalna. Upon reaching Ambika Kalna, he began inquiring from the local people where the house of Gauridas Pandit was. He paid obeisances outside the temple of Srimad Mahaprabhu, which was at the house of Gauridas Pandit. There he found Hridaya Chaitanya Prabhu. Hridaya Chaitanya, upon seeing the boy, said, "Who are you?" Dukhi said, "I want to render service at your holy feet. I have come a long way from Dharendra Bahadur Pura. I was born in the dynasty of the six Gopas. My father's name is Krishna Mandal. My name is Dukhi." So when he asked, "Who are you?" he didn't just simply give his name. He gave a little bit of the background. That's proper. Somebody says, "Who are you?" You say, "My name's Joe." What does that tell you? This tells you nothing, right? So when someone asks, "Well, who are you?" You tell who you are, where you come from, why you're there. You know, you give all information. That's proper response. From that day on, Sri Krishna Das assiduously served as guru. Sri Hridaya Chaitanya waited for an auspicious day and soon initiated him in the mantra. Krishna Das soon became fixed in his service. He named him Krishna Das, Dukhi Krishna Das. Seeing Krishna Das's determined service, his bhakti, and his deep intelligence and understanding, Hridaya Chaitanya ordered him to go to Vrindavan to seek out Jiva Goswami. He ordered him to study the scriptures of the Goswamis and their associates under the guidance of Sri Jiva Goswami. Sri Krishna Das bowed his head and accepted his guru's order to leave for Vrindavan, and on an auspicious day he began his journey. At that time, Sri Hridaya Chaitanya Prabhu gave many messages to Krishna Das to carry to the residence of Vrindavan. He requested him to communicate his dandavas and respects to the lotus feet of the six Goswamis. Dukhi Krishna Das first went to Navadvip Dham. There he asked the local people where he could find the old house of Jagannath Mishra, and he might be allowed to enter that house, and if he might be allowed to enter. Arriving at the house of Sri Gauranga, he found Ishan Thakur and offered full obeisances and respectful prayers to him. Ishan was very old. He asked Krishna Das, "Who are you?" Krishna Das explained who he was. Hearing his story, Ishan bestowed his blessings upon Krishna Das. After spending a few days in Navadvip, Krishna Das turned his sweet face towards Vrindavan and continued on his journey. Should I continue? It goes on for 9 pages. Okay, we can continue. Beautiful story of Hridayi Krishna Das. Ultimately, he became Shyamananda, and Shyamananda, Narottam, and Srinivas Thakur traveled together, and they were the first book distribution party in the history of Gaudiya Vaishnava. They traveled everywhere. Shyamananda became so powerful, and he initiated one disciple named Rasikananda, who preached in Utkala and made the entire area of Utkala all, practically everyone, Vaishnavas. Millions and millions of people he converted into Vaishnavas. And that was Shyamananda's disciple. Okay, so these are some transcendental pastimes. Anything, any last comment before we close? Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.